very much. 4 hours to kick off. How do we put the time in? Sarah, thank you very much indeed. Folks, it really is like Dickens said, it's the best of times, but the worst of times. It's the best of times for the Ulster Unionist Party, unfortunately, very much the worst of times for the devolution we fought so hard for 17 years ago. Mr. Chairman, thank you. Thanks to you, to the party officers, the party executive, for your support, your wisdom, and your advice over the last 12 months. And a great big thank you to you, our party members. You know, I'm getting used to acknowledging the fantastic work of our lords and our elected representatives. So thanks again to our member of the European Parliament, our lords, our members of the Legislative Assembly at Stormont, and our aldermen and our councillors right across Northern Ireland. 89 at the last count as we welcome back a number of returnees, not least John and Jenny Palmer. Jenny, John, welcome home. I say again, welcome home. But you know, Mr. Chairman, there is a category of elected representative I'm far from used to acknowledging because it's been a while, 11 years actually, since we had more than one at this annual event of ours. So will you join me in welcoming to conference this year and up to this platform beside Andy, the Member of Parliament for South Antrim, Mr. Danny Kinahan. And Thomas Elliott, Member of Parliament for the most westerly constituency in the United Kingdom, Fermanagh, South Tyrone. Danny won for us, Tom won for all unionism. That was the strategy. And you know, I was reminded a few days ago that there was one political commentator who said about me negotiating with the DUP, it would end in tears, I would be gobbled up. It would be a case of the cat and the canary, and I was not the cat. Some canary. Conference, we've had 2 good years. Jim Nicholson returned safely to Brussels, double-digit percentage growth at local government level, and a return to the green benches of the House of Commons. I don't know about you, I'm hungry for more. Are you hungry for more? Because it's not just us who are hungry. The country's hungry. Hungry for better politics. Hungry for hope. Because nobody is arguing this is as good as it gets. In 98, Northern Ireland needed a unionist party that understood the concept of the greater good. And we were that party. In 2015, Northern Ireland needs a unionist party that understands the pressing need to return to the greater good above party politics. And I believe, once again, we are that party. In the last few weeks, we have given firm, decisive, and unambiguous leadership in the face of the latest crisis. As others flip-flopped in and out of government, we drew a line, we took a clear, a resolute, and a principled stand. We brought a focus to the continued paramilitary activity, including murder. We refused to turn a blind eye to what even the Taoiseach called Sinn Féin's incredible denial of the IRA. We refused to accept Sinn Féin's single transferable speech of denial. That denial is threadbare and it has worn a hole in the fabric of devolution. We forced paramilitarism to the top of the agenda. We left the Secretary of State no choice but to commission this week's report on paramilitary activity, a report quite shocking in its explicit analysis of those groups today. We are vindicated. Others do what others do. If a Unionist Party reads a report that says the IRA still exists, it has access to weapons, it's run by an army council, and the army council oversees Sinn Féin, and then that Unionist Party decides, oh, well, that's all right then, we're back in government. Well, fine. That cat can lap it up like a very attractive bowl of double cream, but this canary is warning there is something toxic in the air. Our stance also brought, and very quickly too, a political and public focus to the utter dysfunctionality at the heart of this round of devolved government. And be in no doubt, this is not as good as it gets. Not for us, and more importantly, not for the people of Northern Ireland. You know, I sit as chair of the committee of the Office of the First Minister and Deputy First Minister. Seldom does a week go by without another astonishing revelation about the utter dysfunction at the heart of our government. Like the £12 million OFM DFM said they would spend on childcare. We thought investing in childcare was a really, really good idea. We recognise many people who want to work are trapped on benefits for the lack of accessible and affordable childcare. So we supported spending £12 million over the years that ended last March. But how much did OFM DFM actually spend? About one-third of the total. You think that's bad? What about the 80 million in the Social Investment Fund to tackle poverty? They announced they would tackle poverty in 2011. Now, given the scale of the problem, you'd think spending 80 million pounds by the end of March 2015 was hardly a challenge, but how much did they actually spend? One. 1.5 million. In the year before last, 2013-14, from a pot of 80 million, the total spend, £27,610. I make that 0.003 of 1%. You wouldn't get away with it anywhere else. You wouldn't get away with it in London, or Cardiff, or Edinburgh, or Dublin. Especially Dublin, the media would crucify you in the Republic for that sort of utter incompetence. And then there was the court case against OFM, DFM, for their failure to produce an anti-poverty strategy. They lost the case. They were effectively found guilty. And what did one of the OFM, DFM ministers do in response? They welcomed the decision. The junior minister, Jennifer McCann, welcomed scathing criticism of her department. Jennifer McCann, the ministers are the department. That was you the judge was criticizing. You couldn't make it up, could you? It's Alice in Wonderland, a Franz Kafka novel, a Salvador Dali painting. It's surreal, it's grotesque, it's just monstrous. What it certainly isn't is good government. What it is not is as good as it gets. Going into the last Assembly elections, the First Minister characterised the previous mandate as one where survival was the primary objective, but this mandate had to lift its sights into the heady and ambitious skies of delivery. Well, you know, despite the lack of spend on childcare, or social investment, or all the other myriad failures, let us pause to mark and acknowledge a huge success, delivery on an industrial scale. Because as of today, this mandate has seen no fewer than 27 ministerial resignations from the Northern Ireland Executive by the party of the First Minister alone. 27. We have checked with the Guinness Book of Records. It turns out there is no world record for ministerial resignations. Not yet. We applied on their behalf on Thursday. And of course, in addition to all that, there are the special advisors who take a one-off £45,000 of your money to move from one well-paid job to another. And then the way the DUP and Sinn Féin came together a few days ago to kill off a proposal to limit the number of special advisors and their salaries. It tells you all you need to know about what motivates the parties running our government. The greater good has given way to what's good for them. And that is wrong. What we have, conference, is the opposite of political stability, the essential foundation of prosperity. It's not as good as it gets. So what are we going to do about it? Well, you know, people have said in my leadership that it's very managerial, and to an extent that's fair comment. I did sense that when I took over, we weren't in the best possible shape. We weren't exactly playing as a team, and while there's no guarantee people will vote for you because you are a team, there's a very good chance they won't if you're not. So yeah, I've spent some time on management for a reason. So I think we're well enough organised to take Northern Ireland forward again. I read the Belfast Telegraph on Monday. First Minister wrote it was time for him to finish the deal. Finish the deal? He's had 8 years to finish the deal. How much more time does he want? How much more evidence do people need to recognise we're the only party who will stand up to Sinn Féin, we're the only party who will deliver positive outcomes for our people, all of them? So in the next few minutes, let me take my manager's hat off and do three things. I want to give you my vision for Northern Ireland. I want to describe some of the steps we need to take to get there. And I also want to deal with my motivation, because to return to Charles Dickens, the great novelist wrote of memorable days, days that bring about great changes in somebody's life, that will wrap you up in chains of flowers or of thorns. And of course, the problem for Northern Ireland is that too many people have had memorable days that wrapped them in chains of thorns. My own family's memorable day was the 25th of January, 1973, the day the family business was blown up. In an instant, every certainty in my father's life disappeared, but every responsibility remained. Three children to educate, a wife, home, car, the full nine yards. That's when the troubles came home to the Nesbitts. And that does motivate me. And if Republicans don't like my politics, they should really have a word with the IRA gang who planted that bomb, should they not? It's time. For me, it is now time for politics to start delivering those memorable days, but of gold and of roses. And my vision of Northern Ireland is simply expressed, folks. I want Northern Ireland to become the most attractive small country in the world. Why not? After all, we will decide what attractive means. So what would I find attractive? Well, first of all, a proper commitment to a peaceful, politically stable, and a prosperous society. Peaceful, of course, means peaceful. I heard the Prime Minister use a phrase the other day in connection with Islamic extremism. David Cameron said it was time to end what he called the passive tolerance of extreme elements in society. It resonates, does it not? Self-praise, no recommendation. But I was pleased that the panel report and the paramilitaries confirmed our analysis of the three big negatives. They oppress communities, they suppress the economy, and they damage our international reputation. I've always taken the view that there are people who populated those organizations who had energy and commitment, but which they used in terrible, destructive ways, maiming, murdering, manipulating communities. But I believe it's the duty of a responsible politician today to encourage those people to redirect that energy to positive outcomes and not allow them to go to the dark side, engaging in racketeering, organized crime, and all the rest. And that applies to former paramilitaries across the board. So, to be positive, you know, the current talks represent a unique opportunity for a collective political will to be expressed that we want to rid Northern Ireland and the island of Ireland of paramilitarism and the associated criminality once and for all. But conference, we will not be standing shoulder to shoulder against paramilitarism with a political party that insists the IRA no longer exists. It's not doable. I have to say, it's beginning to look like the DUP will. But what a pity they won't stand strong with us. But then again, it's not the first time that we've had to do the difficult thing on our own, and we will. A peaceful, politically stable, and prosperous society is the goal. So how do we deliver prosperity? Because it's not just about money, important as that is. So in my vision, we don't simply measure by the old economic yardsticks of GDP and GVA, gross domestic product and gross value added, or important measurements of our ability to put a few more pounds in people's back pockets. Yes, and that will be, to an extent, transformational. And we know how to do it. But prosperity has to be about more than money. It has to be about well-being, and I make no apology for returning to my theme of good mental health and well-being. Since I started my campaign, I've had the opportunity to take the issue to the Prime Minister's private offices in London. I've taken it to the Stormont House talks, to the Irish government, the American government, communities, and voluntary organisations. I've taken every opportunity, folks, to raise this issue as a profile, and I'm certain that mental health's time has come as an issue politicians can no longer avoid or ignore. It's an area where Westminster can actually offer bipartisan support, and I applaud the former Shadow Secretary, Ivan Lewis, for his support. Because it's a legacy issue, it is not covered by the Barnett formula. So because it's legacy, we can argue we're a special case deserving additional funds and support. So to achieve or help achieve my vision of Northern Ireland as the most attractive small country in the world, our alternative programme for government will put the well-being of our people at its core. I promise you our alternative programme for government will include the creation of a mental health champion. We have a number of them. We have a number of them, you know, victims and survivors, younger people, older people, the rest. The one in four who suffer mental health issues deserve their own champion to promote and advance their cause. I'm not talking about a big commission. It's marginal money. £200,000 should be more than enough to do it, and I'm sure the big mental health charities would cooperate. And as a first objective, zero suicides. It can be done. The experts say so. Our alternative programme for government will shred the old binary approach that insists everything, everyone, has to be labelled orange or green, and then the money follows the labels. Well, for me, identity is much more complex than a binary carve-up. I'm a unionist leader, but I'm not an orange man. And in one very specific regard, I'm actually as Irish as Katrina Ruan. In that, we both represented Ireland at sport. Long, long time ago for me. Now, some, of course, see themselves as pure in their stock and their origins. I'm not sure that's always honest or even helpful. Henry Joy McCracken, leader of the 1798 rebellion, United Irishman. One of his parents was an Ulster Scot. The other was a French Huguenot. Same as me. Go figure. So let's stop pretending life is about binary and accept the challenges of complexity. Many of you may feel even more British than I do. Some of us will feel more comfortably European than others, and some of us will think more deeply than others about our role as world citizens. But it doesn't stop us being members of this great party, and this party must be the defenders of our minority communities. Zero tolerance for hate crime, total commitment to educating our children about tolerance and diversity. I led you into a secret from my days as a broadcast journalist. I always thought unionism was pretty poor at what we call outreach these days, or public relations, or simply engaging with others. I want unionism to find a way to work with nationalism. I'm disappointed when I hear people say they think unionists don't really want to share power. Maybe true of some, but not me, not the Ulster Unionist Party. People forget the first power-sharing success was Dungannon Council in the 1980s, and that was a voluntary offer to share responsibility by the Ulster Unionist Party. Never mind 1998. I do not have to hold my nose to work with nationalists. I do not endorse the idea of rogue or renegade nationalist ministers. We cannot build a better future on those sorts of sentiments. Our children and our grandchildren do not want that as their inheritance. Republicans spent decades trying to bomb and bully us into United Ireland, and now they sit and storm it, passing legislation that doesn't become law until it's signed off by Her Majesty the Queen. You know, there's a lot to be said for the old adage, unionists are too thran to admit that they won, and Republicans are too cute to admit that they actually lost the argument. We need to move forward in a much more coherent and sensible manner, a conference. Republicans and nationalists want a united Ireland, then try to persuade me. I'll have the argument, don't just try and bomb or shoot me into it. But Republicans and nationalists know this, the United Kingdom is our home. I encourage unionists to get on the front foot. Sinn Féin will defend the indefensible by saying the IRA are butterflies who have flown away. Well, I make them this offer, get real. We want to respect your political mandate. Make it possible for us, please. Get on the same page as the rest of the world or accept the consequences of the stand that you have chosen to adopt. You know, when I was a student in England in the 1970s, it was quite difficult to be from Northern Ireland. Wherever you went, the college dining hall, the sports pavilions, the shops, people were suspicious. They weren't interested what side of the traditional fence you came from. You were from Northern Ireland, so simply you were somebody to watch. And we have an opportunity for young people to change that, to change suspicion to envy, to make people envious when they hear our young people say that they are from Northern Ireland. Now, to get their conference, we need to be accommodating. We need to identify the cold spots in society and to start warming them up. For example, we need to address the fact that some people who cherish the Irish language feel we do not respect them for that. Now, it's all very well saying Sinn Féin politicised it, and they did, and they still do in places. But where does that get us? What is the next step for us? Because many unionists see it as their heritage too, so would it not be better to give them some support? Or at least make sure that our words and our deeds do not convey the wrong message to those who cherish the Irish language. We also need to think about the cold spot that is how we are perceived by members of the LGBT community. Conference, what if it was your son? What if it was your daughter? What would you offer them? I hope the answer is unconditional love. Some of us support same-sex marriages, some of us don't, and I think it's part of the beauty of the Ulster Unionist Party that we respect each other's positions. I'm not going to labour the point today, but to those of us who cannot bring ourselves to support a change in the law, I say this, be aware, we are on the wrong side of history. There is a new generation, and they simply do not understand why there is a problem. Now, to make the vision a reality, we require an alternative programme for government that lays down the practical steps that we will take as the route map to success. And today, I commit the Ulster Unionist Party to publishing that alternative programme, properly costed, ahead of the next Assembly elections. I believe you and I come from a proud people, and the begging bowl approach to London does not sit well with who we are. If we commit to spending what we have more wisely and indeed rediscover our sense of civic pride and responsibility, we can achieve great things with what we've already got. So let me give you a flavour of what I have in mind. This government works vertically in silos, ministers with their briefs and their budgets appointed and awarded before any discussion on a programme for government. That simply enforces barriers preventing consensual working. In my vision for better, we will work government horizontally, breaking through the vertical silos government departments bring together and get a focus on positive outcomes for our people. Better educated citizens, healthier citizens, wealthier citizens. Take educational underachievement, a blight on the same sections of society generation after generation. Tackling educational underachievement isn't the sole preserve of the Minister of Education, because we all know healthier children do better at school, so the Health Minister has a role. And so does the Minister for Social Development, ensuring children live in decent housing. So good governments demolish the vertical silos and create horizontal cooperation. But there are actions the Education Minister can and should take. Underachievement in literacy is nothing new, nor is it unique to us. So you do not have to reinvent the wheel to find a solution. The great educationalist Ken Robinson writes of a primary school in Oklahoma where the pupils were well below the state average in literacy. The school hooked them up with a group of older people in the fold, and one-to-one, the pupils spent time reading with an older person. In very quick order, the pupils' literacy shot ahead of the state average. Now, the scheme is called Book Buddies, and as part of our alternative program for government, I call for an army of book buddy volunteers of all appropriate ages. I want 1,000 volunteers willing to give up a couple of hours a week to help our hard-pressed teachers by working one-to-one with children who need additional help in primary and post-primary settings. The only cost is the police checks. Access NI charged £26 for a standard clearance. So if the volunteers don't want to pay for their own police clearance, the total cost for potentially eradicating literacy problems is a maximum of £26,000 out of a Department of Education budget of nearly £2 billion this financial year. Our alternative programme for government will identify low and no-cost eradication programmes. Another for the benefit of the elderly, particularly who are starved of resources to the point where they spend their winters with the dilemma of eating or heating. That's no way to treat our older citizens. One small step to eradicating the problem is energy brokerage, bringing households together to negotiate en masse with energy suppliers for discounted rates of energy supply. All it takes is a commitment to establish a dedicated support unit within government to empower people to make it happen. Another would be to guarantee the vulnerable same-day access to their GPs, starting with pregnant women and those with babies under 12 months of age. They're relatively small steps with little or no cost that would offer short-term improvements to the delivery of government and statutory services. And complementing that is the longer-term vision. What do we want Northern Ireland to look like in 10, 15, 25 years? Like considering a health service overseen in the way the police is, with a chief executive operating like a chief constable, accountable but operationally independent, so they could make the big decisions everybody knows we cannot duck forever. That would free up politicians from the hamster wheel that traps them in a not-in-my-backyard mentality. It's just a thought, but I want to open that sort of debate. And I want power further devolved away from Stormont. Of course, it was natural for the political class of 98 to grab and hold the power that was lost in 72, but the mature thing today is to let it go. We should stick to the vision, but recognise delivery will be different depending on local conditions. For example, delivering a shared future in the leafy suburbs of Stormont on the Upper Newtownards Road will be very different from the challenge 2 miles near the city centre on the lower Newtownards Road, and that will be different from Dungiven, Newry, Ballymena. We need to have the confidence to let go of the levers of control and stick to the big picture and trust the people will be able to deliver on our vision in their own way, in their own time. It does nothing for the well-being of our society to see the continuous dysfunction at the heart of our devolved government. It's not as good as it gets, and it doesn't have to be that way. And I think time is running out for the fix. Invest Northern Ireland are clear. There is a huge pipeline of potential foreign direct investors ready to start doing business here if they see two things: political stability and a commitment to the rate and date of lower corporation tax. And the potential is at least 40,000 new, highly paid jobs. But foreign direct investors do not have limitless patience. What they do have is choices. The London government is determined to turn Manchester into the northern powerhouse, and Manchester will soon be attracting the attention of the investors that we want here in Northern Ireland. So we need to set the rate and the date now. 12.5% is our rate. Our date was April 17, but given the failure to implement the Stormont House proposals, we think we need to knock the date back to April 17. But make the political call, and we can switch our forward focus on enhanced support to our Indigenous businesses. And for the Social Economy Conference, in these days of austerity, the third sector's time has come. So in our alternative programme for government, we will listen harder to the social economy experts, maximise the social economy's potential to contribute to the well-being and purpose of our communities, and celebrate the fact our economy will flourish when the public, private and social economy sectors are respected equally. We have said before, and I say again, we want the Department of Education in the future executive. I want the Ulster Unionist Party to be the champions of educational unachievers. On our watch and on our alternative programme for government, we'd move schools away from the false god of standardisation and start respecting the individuality of the pupil. So, as Sarah said in introducing me, the answer to underachievement is not a return to the 11 plus, because the 11 plus asked the wrong question. It said to a 10-year-old, "We want to know how intelligent you are, but we're only allowing you to show us in terms of your academic ability in English, maths and science." Far too narrow a measure. The right question we want to ask is, in what ways are you intelligent? Are you academic, vocational, technical, sporting, artistic? We will continue to fail a large number of our children unless we start asking the right question and react to the fact that each child is unique, demanding an educational system that designs individual learning plans that respect the spark of ability, creativity, and talent in each and every pupil in our schools, each and every one. And that includes the many with special educational needs. It is, frankly, the opposite of standardization. Just to be clear, I'm not arguing against academic excellence. Where it fits the individual, of course it is to be encouraged, but we should not value those who achieve academically above those whose talents lie in the vocational, the technical, the sporting and the artistic. And we should, and indeed we must, commit to a single education system and offer our children that virtual inoculation against sectarianism at age 4. Conference, I fear the DUP and Sinn Féin see shared campuses as an end in itself. My vision is of all children being educated together. It may take time to get there, but it's a journey we must commit to, acknowledging some will take longer than others. Now, if I'm talking about taking the Department of Education, I'm obviously thinking of a return to government at some point, so let me define the conditions. We will use the next Assembly elections to seek a mandate, not necessarily to go back into government, but to enter the talks on the new programme for government, which will be the first order of business next May. If at the end of that we believe the programme is progressive and it is positive, and also that there is a collective political will to deliver it, then we will consider taking our entitlement at the executive table. But if not, we will stay in opposition. I listened carefully to a speech by the local chair of the CBI recently as he called for a recalibration of the Northern Ireland executive. I agreed with a lot of what he had to say. But I also want to highlight issues where I want to challenge him right back, because he questioned whether the leadership of political parties had the right skill set to govern. So on behalf of the Ulster Unionist Party, I respond, yes, we do. But what we could use... What we could use is more. We could use more people with life skills and experiences standing for elected office. We could, frankly, use more people doing what I did 5 years ago and making the jump into elected politics. So, Mr. CBI, I challenge you, where are the business people prepared to put their wheel to the political, put their shoulder, rather, to the political wheel? It happens in every other democracy. Where are the business people? Where are the doctors? Where are the nurses, the trade unionists, the teachers, and the rest? Well, we have at least welcomed high-caliber members of our armed forces to the party, and their contribution is very welcome and very timely. Very timely, he said, looking at his watch. It's nearly kick-off time. As we prepare for the centenary of the Somme, that solemn, solemn occasion. Since the last Assembly elections, we've seen many changes at Stormont, with Tom and Danny at Westminster. We've welcomed Neil Somerville and Adrian Cochrane-Watson to our group, with Michael Copeland retiring. Andy Allen has picked up the workload in East Belfast. Now, two more MLAs are opening new chapters next May, and on behalf of the party, and with every confidence, I say, on behalf of your constituents in Upper Ban and North Down, I say to Sam Gardner and to Leslie Cree, thank you, thank you, thank you for your many years of service. And I'm sorry to see them go from room 277, but I'm delighted, conference, to report that both Sam and Leslie have accepted my invitation to become vice presidents of the Ulster Unionist Party. So I'm glad we will respect and retain your experience and your wisdom as we enter the next phase of our revival. Conference. I think we have some pretty precious political characteristics. We believe in ourselves again. We have credibility with the public again. And we have the big one, momentum. How many of the five parties in the talks can say that? And I want to build on that momentum in the coming months. So, conference, this is not as good as it gets, politically, economically, socially, culturally. It is time for that Dickensian concept of flowers and gold for all our people. So May the 5th will be a memorable day, and let us offer everyone, Republican, Nationalist, Unionist, Loyalist, and none of the above, a party with a vision, a party with a plan, a party with an alternative program for government that has the delivery of positive outcomes at its heart. Peace, political stability, and prosperity. Deliver that, conference, and it may just be as good as it gets. Thank you very much. Thank you.